Good morning. It's so great to see all of you. I can raise my eyes and look into your faces. We're getting toward the end of our session, about a day and a half to go. This is usually the part where I say, you know, turn it up. Take the hill. We'll be talking about that hill in a moment. But actually, I don't feel any need for that kind of encouragement at all. It just so happened that this time many of the people in this room are extremely experienced practitioners who I've been practicing with for years, and the people who aren't so experienced, are their practice this session has been so sincere and heartfelt that working together we've really created a thing of beauty here. And the only encouragement I really have is, please just keep being who you are and keep doing what you're doing. I wouldn't change a thing. So, as so often happens when Miyoko precedes me in a talk, she touched on some of the themes that I wanted to speak to you about today. She mentioned, in fact, it was very striking, that image of where does the sky stop being the sky and start becoming the air? And when I breathe the air, aren't I really breathing the sky? And when I breathe out, aren't I breathing out sky? Aren't I the sky breathing out into the sky? And to me, that really beautifully captures the spirit of our study text. And I think of it as a kind of indeterminacy. One of the hallmarks of our lineage, the lineage of Dogen Zenji, is this kind of blurring out between practice and enlightenment. Where does enlightenment leave off and practice begin? Where does practice leave off and enlightenment begin? It seems like we can talk about the two things and make some kind of sense to each other, but trying to disentangle them is completely impossible. Now, of course, the usual way of looking at things, especially from someone outside the lineage, is, okay, we sit here and we put up with a lot of misery and discomfort, and if we work hard enough, maybe the penny will drop and we'll get enlightened. And that person from the outside might say, and what about those poor Tenzos? They have to slave away in that hot kitchen all day and they don't even have a shot. You know, or at least the people sitting in the Zendo, you know, have a chance. If they sit really hard and really long, Tenzos, all they're doing is working. Of course, we know that actually there's this Zendo and then there's that Zendo next door where practice enlightenment is taking place 24/7, and the Buddha way is being realized like a wonderful flower opening. And Hongxi is so, his images are so full of this kind of indeterminacy, the seamless flow between that bright moon of enlightenment and the bright and radiant things of this world that are constantly practicing and interacting together and responding together within this field of illumination. Hongxi writes, vast and spacious, like sky and water merging during autumn, like snow and moon having the same color, this field is without boundary, beyond direction, magnificently one entity without edge or seam. So these images of indeterminacy are throughout Hongxi, where you have that vast empty sky, and in the clear light of autumn, it's very hard to tell where the sky leaves off and the water reflecting the sky begins. In fact, the water is evaporating back up into the sky. So it seems like you can talk about them, individually, pointing to different aspects of the same reality, but in reality it is one bright, illuminated field. And I'm sure if you think about our liturgy, these images come up all the time. Snow in a silver bowl, just imagine, snow in a silver bowl on a bright winter morning. It's reflecting all this light in your eyes. So where does that snow leave off, and where does the bowl begin? Isn't it a fool's errand to even try to separate them except for discussion and teaching purposes? Really, all we're doing when we teach this stuff is, we're saying, oh, look. And then if, the student attaches to that, and we go, oh, look! and that's pretty much the job. So there's a koan that gets at this wonderful field of indeterminacy. It's from the Blue Cliff Record, and I thought I would share it with you. It contains more of these wonderful images that are so specific to the way we in the tradition of Dogen look at these things. So a monk asked Qimen, what is the body of wisdom? And Qimen said, an oyster swallowing the bright moon. The monk asked, what is the function of wisdom? And Qimen said, a rabbit getting pregnant. Now, this is one of these koans that's so obvious it's not even worth discussing in a way, but fortunately, because it wasn't so obvious to me, we have the wonderful commentary of Master Yuan Wu, who explains the Chinese folk myths that these images are based on. And so one of the myths has to do with how pearls are created. And so at the full moon, the oysters open up. They take in the bright moonlight. And it's said that this is the way that the pearls start germinating inside the oysters. As for the rabbit, a similar myth about rabbits, that during the full moon, the female rabbits come out into the light of the bright moon, and apparently that's how they get pregnant. We have the stork, the Chinese have the full moon. So if we just, sort of sit with these images a moment, we can see that kind of indeterminacy at work. And to me, the oyster swallowing the bright moon is a wonderful image for our Zazen practice. Here you have a white oyster in the white moonlight, opening its mouth and being fed. It's really hard to tell where the oyster leaves off and the moonlight begins. And so when we do Zazen, every time we let go of a thought, there it all is. As Dogen Zenshi describes it, instantaneous realization, that's our way. We're not doing Zazen to get to some, Tokyu said, to have a samadhi blowout. Although, we like them if they happen. Why not? A high is a high. But they're completely unnecessary because the whole thing is right there. Every time we let go of a thought, there it is, the bright moon. Of course, the bright moon wasn't absent while we were having thoughts. It's just that we sort of forgot who we were there for a moment while we were going down our rabbit hole, and we let it go, and there we are. There's the bright moon. I am the bright moon. Or near as enough as makes no difference at all. So we have that image, and that's an image of the body of wisdom, the Dharmakaya, the bright moon swallowing the bright moon, full of potential, full of creativity, something wonderful germinating there. We don't know what, we don't know what this pearl is going to look like. And then we move on to the next image. The monk asks, what is the function of wisdom? And Chi Men said, a rabbit getting pregnant. So here, are we in the same place, or are we in a different place? We have an oyster swallowing, and now we have a rabbit, probably a white rabbit, taking it in, and something is coming into being. And there are always these two things going on. There's the wonderful peace and stillness of this moment, just as it is. And then there is the flow into the next moment, happening simultaneously. So, is the body of wisdom, the Dharmakaya, is it different than the function of wisdom, the Nirmanakaya? Is it the same? The commentary on this, the footnote to the rabbit getting pregnant, says, if there is someone who can come out, tell me, Is this the body of wisdom or the function of wisdom? In essence, this is adding mud to dirt. Even talking about them as if they're separable is just, you start out talking about the oyster and you're covering yourself with dirt, and then you go on to the emerging potential in the rabbit and you're covering the mud with dirt. Well, what a wonderful mixture this is. This is the teaching of the Dharma. Its function also not separate from the bright moon. So it becomes possible to see very clearly from images like this that we're talking about constant flow, constant reception and response, and a reception and a response that are so mixed up it's almost hard to say where one leaves off and the other begins. Dogen's word for this is jijiu samadhi, which is the self, the samadhi of the self at play. Some an anti-ji translated as the self selfing itself. And I think Ta-Nehisi calls it receptive samadhi. So the receptive samadhi to me captures sort of the oyster part, but it's also responsive samadhi. We sit in our zazen and we let go, and there it all is. At the same time, we're taking in the sun, the air, the sky. Our breath comes out, sweat comes out on our forehead. There's response. So even in this imposed total stillness, there is reception and response inextricably arising together. So the question also arises, okay, so we get that good jiju samadhi in our, on our cushions. What happens when we leave our cushions? And of course, the answer is not difficult to see. This is a process, a connection that continues moment after moment after moment. And you could almost say that when the bell rings, our cushions get up and they go off to do work practice. And meanwhile, we remain on our mat, totally black and dark against the blackness of the zabuton. What we do on our, during zazen, is inextricable from what we go out and do in the world. It's all happens in the blinding light of enlightenment, in the light of this bright moon. Hongxi says, we are told simply to realize mutual response and explore mutual response, then turn around and enter the world, roam and play in samadhi. Every detail clearly appears before you. Sound and form, echo and shadow, happen instantly without leaving traces. Roam and play in samadhi. These words were Maizumi Roshi's dying instructions to his disciples. Roam and play in samadhi. Realize mutual response and explore mutual response. And so what we do in each moment is both our practice and our enlightenment. They're not two. They never have been two. So Waki Roshi said, samadhi is practicing each and everything in the universe moment by moment. Practicing each and everything in the universe moment by moment. Now, that can sound very grandiose. Well, I'm just a little old Ryotan. How do I practice each and everything in the universe? Well, as long as I'm little old Ryotan, sure, the universe looks like a very large place indeed, because I'm about 6 feet tall, and that's about as far as Ryotan goes. But if I'm willing to entertain the notion that this Ryotan is just basically an idea that I have in my head, that's Ryotan starts blurring out, then there's no big universe. That big universe only arises when there's a little Ryotan. When that blurs out, the universe is exactly what's here right in front of me right now. I read the print on the page, or I wash a sink after I use it, or after the wonderful snack that our Tenzo leaves out for us in the evening, I take my dish and I clean it up and put it in the drying rack. I practice with the whole universe. The whole universe is simply this. It's not anything big or daunting or something we have to live up to or be afraid of. Explore mutual response and realize mutual response. Dogen Zenji says, to penetrate one dharma is to master one dharma. And then that old rabbit gets pregnant again, and there's another dharma to penetrate, and another, and another, and another, and another. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. Because such a vital and intrinsic aspect of our practice is the work that we do in the world, there are a number of practices have arisen over the years to draw our attention to that universe, which is this, right here. So we don't wander off into that dimensionless space which is created solely by our personal egos. And one of these practices is mentioned in the Flower Ornament Sutra. Now, there's a chapter in there, and by the way, I've just skimmed it, just so you know. But there's a chapter in there that mentions more than 100 gathas that you can recite as you go about your day and various everyday events occur. And the object of, you know, reciting the little verse is to make you mindful, mindfulness. Now, most of you know that I'm not a big fan of mindfulness and the kind of practices designed to draw your attention to this moment. That's just my taste. It seems extra to me. And yet, it is a profound practice, whether it happens to be my practice or not. I mean, my practice tends to be just try to use common sense and do your best. But these little verses are very sweet, and some of them I just think, I'm not going to give you the verse, but I'll give you some of the occasions which can spark a moment of enlightenment, a moment of being with the universe, of penetrating one dharma. You can recite a verse when you see a large tree. You can recite a verse when you see a bridge. You can recite a verse when you're proceeding on a straight road, or on a winding road, or on a hilly road. It sounds a little quaint, and as I say, it's not my particular practice. But believe me, this matter of devoted attention, wholehearted attention to each moment, these are the stakes of human life. The stakes couldn't be higher. And I realized that recently when I visited my old Dharma friends, Jack and Jean Lee Poggi. Some of the real old timers might remember Jack. He used to love to serve as a Tongariro monitor because, you know, he was one of these long-time practitioners who didn't have much use for all the malarkey and guff and just wanted to sit. And so Tongariro was just made for him. About 7 years ago, Jack had a very serious accident and suffered a traumatic brain injury. And his wife, Jean Lee, became his caretaker. And Jean Lee is also a very long-time practitioner in both the Zen and Tibetan traditions. She sat with Yasutani Roshi at Wisdom House in the 70s. Jean Lee has a schedule because of her caretaking responsibilities. She's on a permanent session schedule to make sure everything gets done that needs to get done. And she starts off her day with Zazen. That's in the schedule. But she also wrote a gatha to help her penetrate each one of those very difficult dharmas that come up when another human life is completely dependent on your skill and devotion and sense of responsibility. And I thought I would share her gatha with you. She calls it the caretaker's gatha. May I dwell in peace and calm abiding. May I listen, speak, and act with wisdom and compassion. May I let go of expectations. May I be kind to myself and others. She recites that each morning before she goes about her day. So, whether you do it Ryo Tam's way or Jean Lee's way or some other way, nothing could be more important than the wholehearted attention you give to each Dharma as it arises. This is the heart of our practice. This is also the white oyster taking in the white moonlight and germinating the pearl of the next moment and the next and the next. So I know I've been preaching to the converted here. I know that no one here thinks that practice is something you do in order to get enlightened. Maybe we all walked in the door with that notion many years ago. I certainly did. But we know that the two flow into each other and are inseparable and are simply the flowering of our human life. And that this continual flowering took place long before our little individual identity came on the scene, and will continue on and on after our little individual identity comes to its natural end as the result of causes and conditions. Hongxi wrote a poem at the end of his life. It was his death poem. He wrote, "Illusory dreams, phantom flowers, 67 years. A white bird vanishes in the mist. Autumn waters merge with the sky."